Everything is going wonderful, as you can see. We've asked the son back for a return appearance. He is here, and he told us that he's going to remain for the rest of the evening, so suck it in. Okay?
How's your cat liking solstice? Is this your cat's first solstice?
Yes.
Have you been to a solstice before?
Never had. Just arrived in town last night.
From where?
Portland, Oregon. Running away from Mount St. Helens.
Did you have to pay admission for your horse?
No, we're working for solstice. We're roving security.
You having any security problems?
No, not that I know. But he's watching.
What's your job as a roving security person?
Just keeping the place secure. Nobody's sneaking in. Nobody's causing a hard time. Just keep it easy.
How do you like your clown face?
Fine. It's all itchy and all, so I have to mess it up to scratch.
What do you think of this clown face?
I think it looks kind of weird.
I'm Mr. Frank the Clown.
Hi, Mr. Frank.
How are you?
Well, good. What are you doing today?
Well, mainly just walk around and making little animal balloons for everybody and just playing my trombone and, yeah, having a good time. Are you having a good time? Ask them what I'm doing. They've been the best audience I had all day. It's been great.
Can I hear you play your trombone?
Sure. I'll play the song I just finished because it's really excellent. Ba-da-ba-da. 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 Yeah. All right. Five people. Come on, everybody. Make me look good. Thanks. Oh, you're great.
Well, we sell a lot of mastodon and fossil walrus jewelry. Yeah, with some jackets from the Orient. The hats. We also have lots of hats. You might have seen my moose hats and insect hats and ram hats and elephant hats and whale hats and fox hats around. And wings and horns.
Why did you come all the way from Anchorage for this?
Oh, we usually come up every year. This is the fourth year we do it, and the summer solstice is one of the most fun fairs in Alaska.
My name is Steve from Alaska Leather and Trading Company. This is Alaska Leather and Trading Company.
It looks pretty portable.
Very portable. Yeah, it travels in one old Volkswagen bus.
Have you been to the solstice festival before?
Sure. Sure. This is a very important yearly event, and a lot of fun, too.
How's business been?
Pretty good.
Do you have fixed prices or do you bargain?
I have fixed prices, definitely, and then I bargain.
Connie, what kinds of food do you sell here?
Okay, we got barbecue spare ribs and beef ribs, chicken, barbecue chicken, hot dogs, hot links, and hamburgers.
Right.
What kinds of food you getting?
Baked beans and cornbread and salad. $3.50, good deal.
How'd you pick up this booth instead of one of the other ones for eating it?
Well, I know Eric here, so I just, that's how well I know him. He gave me a ride hitchhiking once.
You figured you could trust him with your stomach, huh?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Go on, plug him on. You're getting, he's off, come on. Oh, very good. Oh, no.
You dropped something?
Yeah, probably.
The genuine Alaskan mosquito crusher?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made this myself about 3 years ago. It's just my way of getting back a little bit.
Can you describe it?
It has a water pump on it that is, it's a water pump off my Dodge. I hit a tree with it. And all the other stuff is mostly just handmade for me. It's got log chain on it for a chain drive. It's got a trigger. It has a definite mode of operation. To set this up, you have to pull this out and pick this arm up, put the trigger together. And then you need a subject, you need a mosquito, and you have to kind of change him so that he can't fly off on you or anything like that. You kind of, I'm not into, you know, hurting anything, so I kind of tie their legs together, you know, maybe tie their wings back or something, slide them onto this little plate here, and then you turn the crank. And squash the mosquito.
This is Pinchoff, Frankie, and Johnny. Oh, you women in the audience that like to hear songs about ladies gunning down their old man with a 44.
The trials and tribulations of old time love.
From the Summer Solstice Festival, I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
I think it's fair to say that holistic health would try for alternative forms of treatment rather than drugs and surgery, which are called invasive techniques. Holistic health tends to use non-invasive techniques.
Toby Talbot of Fairbanks is a learning disability specialist, a counselor, and she does body work, massage, and touch for health, all with a holistic health orientation.
Whoever you ask, you're going to get a different definition for holistic health. It's, for me, a philosophy, and it has several elements to it. It is where the client is responsible for part of his treatment, where the holistic health practitioner is responsible for part of the treatment, and there's a nice interplay between them. It is where the process of education is really important. It deals a lot with prevention and early treatment.
When I've seen holistic health written out, it's spelled H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C. Mm-hmm. Yet what you're talking about sounds almost like a W-H kind of thing, the whole...
It really is a WH. It takes in the whole picture, the whole lifestyle. It takes in everything that goes on in that person's life. If the person, for example, has a bad shoulder, the holistic health practitioner, be he a medical doctor, a nurse, a counselor, a teacher, will not look simply at the shoulder, but will look at the person's entire lifestyle, will look at the person's social life, emotional state, the physical state. All these things contribute to his total health picture.
Okay, now you mentioned touch for health and massage as two approaches.
Mm-hmm.
These are not generally recognized medical practices.
That's true.
So is this kind of an alternative approach to healthcare?
Yes, you can call it an alternative approach to healthcare or a concurrent approach to healthcare. It depends, again, on one's definition of holistic health. For me, there's no conflict between the traditional kind of medicine, Western medicine, and the more oriental medicine.
Is that then kind of the derivation for holistic health, for holistic medicine, is it an Eastern approach?
No, I don't believe that's true. I believe that the holistic health just incorporates the Eastern philosophy. It's based, I think, more on the inclusion of all aspects of a person's life and lifestyle rather than any specific technology.
Would a person go to a holistic health practitioner as well as a medical doctor?
He might. He might find the same person in one person.
That happens.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that happens.
Given the sound of it, which is kind of one of those Aquarian Age type sounding things, do you find that ordinary folks like your parents or mine might go, or that it's mostly younger people who are, or more open-minded people, I should say, that are attracted to holistic medicine?
I think the climate in the country is changing today, and that more people are looking for alternative ways to do most everything, and healthcare is one of those. And I find people who maybe 10 years ago would not experiment, seem to be exploring now and investigating new ways of doing health care for themselves and for members of their family as well.
Toby Talbot, learning disability specialist, counselor, body worker, and holistic health advocate. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
You will have 61 people or so who have supposedly won in the land lottery, but will have, in effect, won nothing until the outcome of this lawsuit.
The 61 people lawyer Steve Williams refers to are the ostensible recipients of land in one of the current state land disposal offerings, an area more than 22 square miles in size, classified as agricultural and referred to as Potlatch Ponds. That land on Tina Hot Springs Road, northeast of Fairbanks, has been the subject of controversy. A group calling itself the Tina Hot Springs Road Residents Association, chaired by Jim Widener, contends that the land is ideal wildlife habitat, but unsuitable for farming. They've been trying to convince state and local officials of that point of view and get the acreage withdrawn from the land lottery. Their efforts have been energetic, but unsuccessful. So yesterday, the group went to court after filing a complaint for declaratory judgment and injunctive relief and a temporary restraining order against the state. Judge Jay Hodges' decision on the temporary restraining order was largely satisfactory to Attorney Williams, but may prove awkward to the 1,027 people who have applied for the 61 available Potlatch Ponds parcels. Hodges ruled that the state will pull the names, but further action leading to ownership is not permissible, pending a decision on the merits of the complaint. That decision, Williams estimates, may take a month, and until then, the people whose names are selected are either between or on the horns of any cliché you choose.
If I were an applicant, I would just as soon not know that I'd been chosen for nothing. In other words, you know, when your name is picked, what do you have? You have limbo. You're on the horns of the dilemma. You know, do you hang around and wait for the court case to be decided? Another problem with that is that if your name is picked, apparently the way they're going to do it is if you're picked in a later, you know, in a later parcel, not involving the Potlatch Ponds, you're ineligible unless you turn down the Potlatch Ponds, you know, before your name comes out of the hopper in the second parcel. And so, I mean, I argued that, but I think the thing that swayed the judge or appeared to is the state said that their estimates of what it would cost to hold a second lottery for just those parcels range from $50,000 to over $100,000. And, you know, I have no way of assessing how accurate the estimates were, but I guess basically they were saying they had to go through a lot of procedures and a lot of public notice and to set the whole thing up. And I think that probably influenced them to decide to allow them to draw the names, but not to allow that to really have any effect other than the people who are drawn will know that if the state wins the lawsuit, then they will be able to go ahead and execute contracts and proceed with the transaction.
The complaint for declaratory judgment contends that the Potlatch Ponds disposal area is not suited for agriculture, is an important wildlife habitat, is used extensively for recreational purposes, and further that the entire disposal is premature. That House Bill 66 states that the disposals of 100,000 acres of state land per year will occur after September 1st, 1980, not now. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
The outlook for king and chum salmon in the interior is good this summer, according to fisheries biologist Fred Anderson, but prices are down. Early indications are that the runs of king and summer chum into the Yukon are at least average, and the fish are larger.
The early openings in the lower Yukon indicated a much substantially larger king salmon, you know, individual weight than we've seen in the past. They were averaging, I don't know, 23 to 25 pounds.
The king run is on right now at the mouth of the Yukon and will continue in the middle and upper Yukon and the Tanana probably until the middle of July.
In a general way, the peak of the chum run occurs a week to 10 days after the king salmon run peaks.
Mm-hmm.
We normally don't see any kings or chums up here in any numbers anyway until around the 1st of July, 4th of July, something like that, in the Tanana River near Fairbanks.
There's no forecast yet on the silver salmon run, but there are estimates on the fall chum run. That's expected to be relatively weak, just like the market.
Prices are down on chum salmon especially. Mainly because I think of the current glut of red salmon on world markets and the anticipated large run in Bristol Bay this year.
What are the prices that people are being offered for kings and chums?
At the mouth, king salmon are bringing about a dollar a pound. They're averaging about a dollar a pound now, and chums are being sold in that area for 15 to 25 cents a pound, and they've averaged about 20 cents a pound thus far. The fishery really hasn't gotten going in the upper part of the drainage yet, but early indications are that the price will be a half to two-thirds of what it was last year. I expect that in the middle Yukon, chums will be selling for 15 to 20 cents a pound and possibly less, but it's too early to say.
Prices are also down on salmon roe, selling for a dollar to a dollar and a half a pound. It's been as high as $5.50 to $6 per pound in the past year or two. It appears that this year's fish stories from people who are fishing commercially in the interior won't be about the fish that got away, but the money that didn't come in. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. It's Friday and it's raining, just in time for the weekend. That seems to be the pattern this summer, gorgeous during the week while you're locked up indoors and crummy when you can escape. Though some folks are escaping to a new restaurant in town. Here it's news if it's not another pizza parlor. It's actually an old restaurant lounge type place, renamed, remenued, and offering a free glass of beer or wine with lunch. So who cares if it's raining? Lots of people care about the recreational softball league, and even more care about the semi-pro Alaska Gold Panners, currently playing a four-game series against the North Pole Knicks. The second game will be played tonight. And a young girl is still missing from North Pole. Her bicycle's been found, but nothing else so far. The borough planning director, Phil Berrien, is about to be missing, too, from his job. Today was his last day, following a stormy encounter with the Planning and Zoning Commission, a citizens group chaired by former mayoral candidate Rex Lance. Berrien is one of five senior members to resign from the planning department recently. Their entire staff is, or was, 18 employees. Back to the rain. Maybe since it's Juneau weather, it's time to join the time change bandwagon. And since Fairbanks likes to do things a little differently, maybe we could consider Greenwich time. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.